A full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed down up inside.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about your car repair, and we have figured out that we actually are being streamed on the internet, so there are people from other cities that are listening to us, so I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to give you first shot. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area and you want to talk about your car and ask a car question, the phone number is 888-960-9696 888-960, because we're on 960 the Patriot, 9696. And those of you that are in the Phoenix area, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open, and I'll be waiting for you. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my friend Bob and Steve at Quality Transmission in Tempe. Quality Transmission holds down the East Valley just fine. He does a great job. He's surrounded by a lot of other transmission shops, but he's the only one you get my promise on. My promise is this. If you have a bad experience and you go to the Better Business Bureau and file a nice complaint, and through the process, the Better Business Bureau tells one of my shops to either make a refund or give you money back, and the shop refuses, I will up to $5,000. So it's pretty simple. I'm putting my money where my mouth is because people just can't pay their way onto my list, I promise you. But Quality Transmission is just exactly that, Quality Transmission. He's located on McClintock, north of University, between the 202 and University on McClintock. And it's a great place for your car, your truck, your 4x4, or your motorhome. And you can tell him that Mark sent you. All righty. Oh, baby, we finally got that truck that was just eating me alive out of the shop this week. It came in, and we did some work on it, and through the process of the work we did, we lost oil pressure, the patient died, and Mark had to put a new motor in it, and Mark doesn't feel bad, it's just a cost of doing business, but we were unable to determine what caused the lost oil pressure, so the motor is having an autopsy done back east for us. So we are actually going to spend some money to find out what we did wrong, because frankly we don't know, but we do know this. It happened on our watch. Alrighty, let's see what else is kind of nice. You know, AAA came out with something the other day that says expense of owning a car jumps to $9,000 a year. And they said on the average the cost of driving 15,000 miles a year rose to 60 cents a mile, or $9,122 a year. That's a 2% increase over last year. And they have five cost categories: maintenance, fuel, tires, insurance, and depreciation. Now, here's the problem I have with that. No matter what car you drive, you've got maintenance and fuel and tires and insurance and depreciation. So I'm not quite sure that represents, and some cars are better than others, and obviously it depends on how much money you've spent on your car. The maintenance costs are based on the cost to maintain a vehicle and perform the needed repairs for 5 years or 75,000 miles, including all the labor and the parts and all that kind of stuff, and the purchase of an extended warranty. And that's where we separate. Of course, we separate on a lot of issues, but I think extended warranties are just the worst thing you can buy for yourself. It has nothing to do with me. I don't have a dog in this fight. But here's what they do. When you spend, let's say you spend $2,000 on your extended warranty. Well, first of all, the guy who sold it to you is going to get anywhere from 5 to 15% of that. So let's take the middle and say 10% out of the $2,000 goes to him. That's $200. Now they have $1,800 left. This insurance company has to have an administrator to handle the thousands and thousands of claims. Well, the administrator's not going to work for free. So between half of the entire amount and three-quarters of the entire amount goes to the administrator. Let's say that half of the entire amount goes to the administrator. So we got $200 for the salesman. We got $800 for the administrator. and that leaves the insurance company with $1,000. Now, you're thinking you have a $2,000 credit, but you don't.
Call her Terry.
And when you get close to any kind of second or third issue, they're going to clamp down on you. I've seen them ask for a transmission service records because your alternator failed. There's no relationship there. And they voided the coverage because you didn't have your maintenance records in order. I've seen them want me to put on the cheapest parts money could ever buy. And many shops will refuse to do that. That puts you in the middle of a dogfight between us and them, and we're trying to take care of you. I've seen them do some things that just were unbelievable, and not to mention the quality of the people that come out here and look at the problem. Many of them have no experience whatsoever in auto repair. So you say, I've got an intake gasket that failed. That contaminated the oil with water, and that caused the rear main, main bearings to go bad along with some rod bearings. So he says, well, I need your coolant flush. Here you go. He says, I need your spark plug records. Spark plugs have nothing to do with this, buddy. That's like you going to the ear doctor and him saying, you know, go get your toenails done. It doesn't make any sense. So extended warranties are just not my favorite. I don't buy them. Nobody in my family buys them. And if you ask me what I think of extended warranties, I'm going to say put the money in the bank and use it, because you're going to get far more use of that money, because they're going to get really tight. And after you get past $1,000, there's no money left, even though you paid $2,000 for the policy. There's just no money left, and they're going to fight you tooth and nail. Think about it. Is it really that easy? Is it really that easy to get rich over extended warranties unless, of course, you're able to duck out of many of them? Of course. Terry, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, I'm working on a Acura 2001,
okay.
3.2 TL, and it's got dual fans on the radiator.
Uh-huh.
Now, is one supposed to, if the air is off, should there only be one come on?
It depends on how it's wired.
Okay.
Okay, so, and let me tell you how to tell.
Right.
First of all, shut the air off.
Okay.
And just let it sit there and idle. And if you want to, you can cover the front of the radiator, the front of the grill with a big blanket.
Right.
All right. And when the gauge gets to, I'd say 5/8 to 3/4.
Right.
It should come on. The fan should come on. Now.
One or both?
It could be one or both.
Okay.
Now, then we know, and then that fan will cycle off when the needle gets down about 2 needle widths.
Right.
Okay. So at this particular point, we're going to stop our testing, and tomorrow morning we're going to pick up when it's cold.
Right.
So tomorrow morning you're going to start it up, and you're going to turn your air on immediately. Now, if the fan is connected to the air conditioning, the fan's going to be connected to either the low-pressure switch or the high-pressure switch.
Okay.
And so it's watching for something to tell me to come on, and usually it's the high-pressure switch, and it's usually when we get above 400 pounds.
Okay.
In the morning, you're going to kind of bring the idle up a little bit, and when you turn the air on, you could get one or both. And when you turn the, and because you don't get any on, I just want you to stay there, kind of warm the car up a little bit, because we need to build head pressure.
I got you.
And so it could be one or the other. And really, if you wanted to, you could go to an auto parts store that would give you a wiring diagram, and you could look at it yourself and follow the wires from the power through the ground, through the switches, through the rheostats. However, let me tell you this. There's been times even my shop has bypassed and put those two fans together because we can't keep the car cool. So we'll just run both of them. So when number one is commanded on, we use it to jumpstart number two and vice versa. So they both come on. But usually you'll see an extra relay in the system when we do that. And that just, sometimes it's a benefit to the customer.
Okay, so there's no problem, and especially in a desert here, that ain't a bad idea.
No, and Terry, it's important to know that your Acura is going to run between 1/2 and 3/4. It needs to run there. It should run there. And if it gets above 3/4 on the gauge, you should see the fan turn on or hear the fan turn on, and you should see the needle drop. However, if you're on the freeway and you're stuck in traffic and it's a 110 degree day, it may go a little past the 3/4 mark and it may struggle to bring that number down, but you know why you're stuck in traffic and we've got no airflow over the radiator. So don't worry about it. If it goes into the red, I want you to worry. But other than that, just think about where you're at, and does that explain why I'm sitting here at two needle widths over the three-quarter mark?
Well, that's both of them comes on, so that's not a bad thing for
no,
Phoenix.
It is not. It is not. And you know what? I wouldn't spend a dime looking at that. What part of town do you live in?
Scottsdale.
Okay. If you go into marksalem.com and go to one of the Scottsdale shops,
right.
Just say, Mark sent me over here. Would you print out the cooling fan wiring diagram for me?
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure they will.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
All right. You betcha, Terry. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960 if you want to give us
caller
a call.
Joe.
And just like Joe did. Joe, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Listen, I've got an 01 Silhouette Oldsmobile minivan.
Okay.
And because of this traffic, traffic's horrible, you know. I mean, they get driving like crazy on these roads.
Yeah.
And we're concerned about, my wife and I don't go that far, but we're concerned about being hit. And I was wondering, are those vans any stronger than a regular car, or are they lacking a lot of stuff in the
side?
2 minutes.
No. I think you're going to be all right. Really and truly, Joe,
yep.
It just depends on who hits you.
Yeah.
You know that you're going to lose the battle if you get broadsided by a one-ton four-wheel drive truck.
You're right.
Okay? You're gonna be shaken up, and the one-ton's going to be kind of high, so it's going to hit the middle of your door.
Right.
How about a Honda Civic? You outweigh the Honda Civic, and the Honda Civic's real low, so he's going to come in right at your kick panels and slide underneath you.
Yeah.
So really and truly, it just depends on, but I want to tell you something. If you wanted to take my grandkids to Disneyland, and obviously I love them with all my heart, I'd let you take them in the Oldsmobile van because if God wants them, he's going to take them.
Yeah.
And
I know, I told my wife, I said, if any of those cars hit us broadside at 60 miles an hour on the side, we probably had it.
Well, it one good thing, though, is I've seen cars crushed to one seat.
Uh-huh.
And the driver or the passenger has lived.
Yeah.
So just belt yourself in and just make sure you don't have an ABS light on and make sure you don't have an airbag light on, and you're as safe as we can make you.
I see. Well, okay? So how about one of those Mercury Grand Marquis? Would that be a stronger car?
Well, that's a tank.
Yeah, right. I may get a tank.
Well, if you want a tank, then you're going to be a whole lot safer in that than you are if you get broadsided by something big. That Grand Marquis is going to move a whole lot less sideways than that Oldsmobile Silhouette van.
Well, I know they've taken a lot of metal out of these cars, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, your van is a box, too. So, you know, keep in mind that it's a house on a frame. So
yeah.
It's, all right. Thank you very much,
okay,
Joe.
Thank you for your time.
You betcha. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You can come right in, and we'll talk to you as fast as we can. I'm Mark Salem. We'll be right back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody.
The mechanic raised
21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. The lines are wide open, so if you have a car question, now's your time. 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix area and you want to use a free number, 888-960-9696. So just remember the 888, and then I'll spot you this, 960-9696. That's pretty easy. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my friends at Action Auto Tom. He's a fisherman, and he's a mechanic, and he's a technician, and he's a shop owner, and he's the kind of guy you hope your daughter brings home someday. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley Road. He's a family-owned operation. They do good work. They use factory-recommended intervals for maintenance services they perform, and that's important. It means they don't make them up themselves. Their technicians are ASC certified, and a couple of them are master certified, and they get the job done right. So they're A-rated, A-plus rated at the Better Business Bureau. So anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, and you're looking for a good repair shop, please try Action Auto. That's I-17 in Deer Valley. Okay, here's something that's going to wad up your underwear. Guy takes his car into a repair shop, and the car is in there for the 15,000-mile service. Folks, the 15,000-mile service. Can I say that again? 15,000 miles. 99.9% of the cars at 15,000 miles need a tire rotation and an oil change. And that's it. That's it. However, I'm sitting here looking at a receipt here, okay? They say oil change with synthetic oil. Check all fluids, I agree. Check steering and suspension system. Why? Do we have a symptom? at 15,000 miles? Check belts and hoses, I agree. Reset the maintenance light, I agree, and road test it. Okay. Then we're going to inspect and rotate and balance the four tires and check your brakes at the same time. Why are we balancing tires? Is there a symptom? Is there a vibration? Is it just because we get to charge money for it? And then finally, the thing that is just, we're going to charge you $40 to check your alternator, your starter, and your battery. And you know why they do this? It's because you let them. So we have $170 in labor. We have $65 in parts. And you know what the $65 in parts is? It's a chemical that we're going to put in your oil to help your oil be better. And I'm not kidding you. This is from the customer's mouth. We're going to put a gasoline additive in to make your gasoline be better gasoline. Help your gasoline. And then we're going to use the throttle body cleaner to clean up your throttle body. Folks, you've heard about cleaning up throttle bodies. They are symptom-driven. That does not appear in your owner's manual. That is not a maintenance line item. They are symptom-driven. When you have a specific problem, and I'm not going to put the problem in your head, when you have a specific problem, we're going to clean the throttle blades to fix that. $40 is a fair price, but $40 at 15,000 miles is a ripoff. That's all there is to it. So what we've got here is $235 worth of bill that should have been a tire rotation, what, $25, and a synthetic oil change, what, $80? $105, maybe $130. I'll give you $130, but they charge $235. Now, he did say to me, the customer said to me, I'm a little concerned about these chemicals. I didn't want to yell and scream about the $65 worth of chemicals. And I said to him, just put them on notice to put in your file that you do not want any unauthorized products or services done to your car when you go in for repair. You're going to go in, and if you have symptoms, you already know there's going to be a diagnostic charge and then maybe a part and maybe a labor to fix that problem. There'll be three portions of your bill, and you'll know about all of them before we do it. But, folks, the reason why they do this is because we're all, I mean, it's hard out there. The car repair industry is hard. People aren't spending money.
Mark.
There's people are passing on brake jobs. It's tough out there. And everybody is having financial problems, and parts aren't getting any cheaper. Technicians can't start cutting our techs back. And obviously not everybody's in great financial shape. So the idea is they do it because you let them and because you don't raise your hand, and so you can't complain. Otherwise, you need to complain. When you go in there, take control. Call me with your estimate. How much is your diagnostic fee? Give me a range, $75 to $125. Perfect. Call me with the estimate. Don't do any unauthorized work. That's what you need to do. That's what it's all about. Every one of you that's listening to me right now has left a garage feeling really bad. And for whatever reason, some of you went back and made them understand you were mad, and some of you didn't. But it's kind of like the Better Business Bureau in this respect. There's a lot of bad shops out there, but you couldn't tell it by looking at the Better Business Bureau because, you know why? Nobody complained. But there's a lot of bad shops out there. So you owe it to us and everybody else that when you have a bad experience, file a complaint and put us on notice. So when we go in, we can see that this transmission shop in the East Valley has a F rating because of complaints where, you know, another one has an A+. That's important. So as a society, let's take care of one another and let's make sure when we're unhappy that we let somebody know. Mark, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Hey, quick question. I have a neighbor that's got a 97 Dodge Grand Caravan van that's set up for a wheelchair through the back, but she's got a front caliper on the right side, and she's had it replaced twice, and what the problem is, her ABS light is on. The problem is it's sticking out, and it won't retract, and nobody can fix it. So whenever it goes out, it stays out and stays out, and then within 2 months, the pads are back.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question, okay? How come you use a different name when you call in?
Who?
How come you use a different name when you call in?
I don't think first names are important.
Okay.
I know I can't give you the name my wife calls me.
Well, that's true. But you used Andy last time you called in, and then you used John the time before that.
I've been Andy, Joe, John, Fred.
All right. I just want.
I'll use Brock wondering. Next time.
And you can use Brock. That we'll just call you Brock.
Oh, don't do that.
Okay. All right. The answer to your question is the piston stuck? And here's something else. The rotor has to wobble a tad.
2 minutes.
So it's going to go left and right, left and right, and that's going to help push the piston back in. If the rotor isn't wobbling, piston won't be pushed back in because there's no wobble to push it back in. Or if the caliper is just bad, then you're it's going to take a pair of pliers and a pipe wrench to push it back. So the fix is replace both of them. Just replace both front calipers.
She did that twice.
Okay. Well, and then replace the hose, because if the caliper is coming out and your foot's not on there, you open up the bleeder. It blows a bunch of... You're going, hey, wait a minute, how come there's pressure in this line when there shouldn't be? Then you look at the hose and you go, oh, I bet the inside of that hose is collapsed, and it's holding pressure on that caliper. So then you go up to the fitting on the hose on the front side, and then on the back side, and you break that loose, and you go, oh, look here. There's no pressure here, but there is pressure here, and so that $20 line is the problem. Okay, Brock?
Well, you know what?
1 minute.
I appreciate it.
All righty, buddy. Good luck to you. Thank you very much. And when we come back, we're going to take your call. You can use whatever name you want.
I'm loving it.
You can use your buddy's name. You can use your wife's name. You can use anything. I don't care. But I usually recognize your voice. I've been around this radio business for 20 years, so it's going to be hard to pull one over on me, but that's okay. And I think Mark, John, Andy, whatever the heck his name is, he took my teasing just fine. Just call in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and I'm laying for you. I'm telling you, I'm laying for you. So if you're going to use a different name, I have over 2,000 names on record, and I'm voice testing all of you. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. This is Under the Hood on 960 The Patriot. All right. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. I'm your host for the next 2 hours. We're talking about car repair. Anything you want to talk about, 602-508-0960. And here's the plan for today. Everybody that calls in, their name is Mark. Okay? Everybody that calls in, their name is Mark today. So we're going to have Mark after Mark after Mark after Mark. And we might have to divide you up by cities so you'll know when I say, hey, Mark, how are you? And seven of you go, are you talking to me? So anyway, Mark, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Brian and Thelma, husband and wife, are just the nicest people. They had no problem qualifying for the very tight filter I use for shops on my best car repair shop list. None whatsoever. They've been family owned and operated for years and years, and they've been in Mesa since 1970. Within about a mile or two of where they're at now, they've always been on Main Street. They're equipped to handle anything, major, minor, foreign, domestic, truck, RV, whatever. They understand that your vehicle is a major investment, and they are going to care for your car as if it was their own. So Thompson's is at Stapley and Main, just east on the south side of the road. Stapley and Main, just east on the south side of the road. And you just can't do better than Thompson's Auto Repair in that area. All righty, let's go to the phones. Mark, good morning to you, Mark. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark.
Yes.
You know, I saw that article about the car ownership thing, and I don't think it's true at all, because if you're like me and you have a 94 Chevy pickup with 304,000 miles, I have zero depreciation, and maybe once a year I get a repair bill for $300 for a water pump or something. But then my wife says, well, I don't know why you keep wasting money on that truck. It's just a rat hole. And I said, because I'm not losing $4,000 a year in depreciation,
right,
and paying $400 a year for registration and $800 a year for insurance on a new pickup.
Hey, you put her on the phone right now. Is she around?
I'll straighten her out. She's out of town. That's why I can talk like that.
You know, I agree with you, and I'll tell you why. First of all, every month that you drive that truck, you can't even rent a car for $300 a week. I'm going to assign a $300 a month for your truck. Every month, you have to pay the truck $300 for its service. Now, the truck is going to turn around and charge you against that $300. How many months do you get away with nothing? Otherwise, that's a credit. It's a credit. Basically, that truck costs you about $300 a month to drive, and sometimes you're not going to spend that because you don't have any maintenance, because, heck, that's your probably annual premium for the truck on insurance. you are exactly right. You bring up a good point. And I think what you're trying to say is, and you did a good job at saying it, is they're talking about new cars. Because we all agree that when you drive it off the lot, you've lost a third to 40% of the value. Boom, gone. And once the time you hit 10,000 miles, you've lost half the value. So I agree with you. I agree with you. It's got to be talking about those cars that are 6 years old and newer, because it certainly isn't talking about my 96 Bounder motorhome. It's not. The entire plates and insurance and maintenance and gasoline and all that thing isn't $1,000 a year. So I agree with you. And it's Bob. I'm teasing him. His name is Bob. But Bob, thank you very much. And when your wife needs to be straightened out, you just have her call me, buddy. Just have her call me. All righty, buddy. Thank you very much. All righty. We're just getting
caller Will.
We're just getting in trouble today. Who cares? Will, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning. I got a little story about how mechanics think or communicate to their customers.
Okay.
I had a problem with my 99 Cadillac STS, and I went from mechanic to mechanic, and they said, well, put this in it, put that in it. Well, long story short, it turned out to be on this particular North Star engine, God bless it, it was the intake manifold gasket leaking, which sent the signal to the gasoline guy to put more gas in and accelerate my car without me touching the gas pedal. So anyway, I was tired of going 90 miles an hour everywhere, and got it fixed by the little shade tree mechanic guy. He was really good, and he's been a mechanic 30 years. He's a good guy. But what goes through a mechanic's head when you take off the intake manifold and you see the starter there? Oh, well, of all places to put a starter. Well, that's what the engineers at Cadillac do. Anyway, so what goes through, what goes through a mechanic's head after 30 years' experience to not give me a 10-cent phone call and say, hey, buddy, how long you had this car, blah, 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 blah. You think maybe I should test this starter? No, just slap it all back together, and the next day I can't start my car. And I never knew that the starter was there until I was underneath the car trying to bang on the solenoid to get it going again. There's nothing there because it's underneath the intake manifold.
Jeremy, stop laughing at him. Hold on just a minute. Hold on.
Help me understand a mechanic's brain, because the next time I go to a mechanic and he doesn't tell me that, oh, there's this little 10-cent piece underneath this $400 piece that might need replacing. Tell me how I can cope with it.
I'm going to handle it.
I'll hang up.
I got it. First of all, I agree with you. Second of all, you've hurt my feelings because, well, when I get back, I'm going to tell you what it looks like from our side of the coin. We'll be right back.
Most Friday nights, I can be found in the bed of my truck on an old Chase Lounge. Into my spot at the drive-in show.
When was the last time anybody went to a drive-in movie with their lawn chair in the back of their truck? Those were the good old days. Our kids will never understand how much fun that was. And besides that, today they're all sitting in the back of the truck with their iPhones. They're talking to somebody in the next zip code. Anyway, 602-508-0960 if you want to talk about cars, and you're more than welcome to do that. If you need a body shop, and Will, I'm going to get back to you in just a second. If you need a body shop, you don't know from day to day if you do, but I want you to remember the name of one of them, Phoenix Body Works. Phoenix Body Works. Greg May, the owner, will be your advocate if and when you have an insurance claim. It could be your insurance company that's going to pay the bill, or it could be the other driver's insurance company. But one way or another, if you've never walked down that dark hallway, you're going to need help. And Greg May is a good advocate. He's fair, he's respected by the insurance companies, and he's not going to let anybody pull a fast one on you. He's hassle-free, insurance company-friendly. They'll make sure your car is put back together the right way, on time, affordable price, and quality parts. There's no such thing as putting cheap parts on your car. It's important to repair your car to its pre-accident condition, no matter who's paying for it. So I'm proud to have Greg May and Phoenix Body Works on my best car repair shops list. They serve Anthem, New River, and North Phoenix area, and they're located at 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley. So, again, Phoenix Body Works, Phoenix Body Works, Phoenix Body Works. Just
Thomas
remember
next.
That name. Alrighty, let me talk to Will real quick. He was talking about that starter, and Tom, I'm going to get to you in just a minute. But Will, you're exactly right. That should have been an option presented to you. Now, I don't want you to represent that starter option as being a small part, because that starter was probably $200 or $300. The labor to remove it would have been an additional $10, as opposed to maybe $800 to go back and get it. But you have to understand something. Our industry is picked on for upselling all the time. So let me take a step back and let me describe what you just said. Will took his car in, and the guy gave him a specific estimate for the intake manifold. And he told him it was going to be $850, and that included everything he needed. Well, once he got the intake manifold apart, he called up Will and said, "Oh, you're going to need a cooling system flush. I didn't have that in my estimate." And then he's going to call you again and say, "You know what? I didn't have the gasket there." And then he's going to call you up and say, "Hey, the starter's staring me at the face." And nobody that hears that story likes it. And so by the time you leave, you're at $1,200, and you went in there because he quoted you $850 on the front side. So we really work hard to talk about those things in advance. But I think the possibility exists that this 30-year veteran that works perhaps out of his garage, he had never seen a starter underneath the intake manifold, and I bet it caught him by surprise. And I'll bet when he got that intake manifold off, he goes, "Whoa." Well, he may not have known it was under the intake manifold, so he couldn't prepare you in advance. Most all the rest of us will say on a timing belt, "I'm going to bid the timing belt, all the rails, I'm going to bid the tensioner, I'm going to do the idler pulley and the cam and the crank seal. I'm bidding all of that because I want you to know what the worst case scenario is. And when I get in there and I find out, oh, the crank seal's not leaking, the cam seal's not leaking, then I'll deduct the labor and the parts related to those." On the other hand, there's going to be some shops that are going to take advantage of you and put those in no matter what. So it's a tough dilemma. And the only thing I can tell you, and I don't mean any pun intended, there isn't a shop I know that has a pair of crystal balls. They just don't have them, and they don't know what the future has to hold. So go back and talk to him, and I would hope that he would work with you on that. And it is ironic that he was the last one to touch that starter, be in the same area, and now all of a sudden it's not working. But then again, it's a 99, so work with him. He'll be all right. Tom, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Mark, a couple things. Something that I don't ever hear people address, which might be a good preventative thing, is, you know, these code keys.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people just run around with one key. And what I've done is I went and had a key cut that'll get into my, it'll open my door, put that under, you know, in a hide a key,
yep.
But it won't start the ignition. And then I put my second key, I hide it somewhere in the car, because, man, you can get, people don't realize if they get stuck, or if they don't make a duplicate key with, when they're down to one key, they may have to, it's going to cost them hundreds of dollars.
Hundreds, you're right, $200. You're exactly right.
What and then if you lose it, and then you have no key, some of these, I'm understanding, you got to change out the whole system. You got to get it towed in. It might be $1,500 or $2,000. So my suggestion is get an extra code key made, hide it in the car, get the key cut to open the door. Because if somebody happens to find your code, you know, the door key, they still can't steal your car.
Exactly.
But at least you got it with you instead of being over in California and say, "Oh, I got my spare key at home."
And you're exactly right. Let's back up and let's start with this. First of all, if you have a key for your car, you should swap it with your husband once a year, or your husband should swap his old key with your new key once a year. So we're going to swap those keys back and forth. That eliminates us with one bad key. Number two, you're right. Have a door key cut, and then hide that, and then inside your car, hide an ignition key. So we're going to call them door key and ignition key instead of a code key, because it's hard to determine if you have a coded key or not. So you're right. That's a great idea. Hide the door key on the outside of the car, and then hide the other one on the inside of the car. And really and truly, you ask the police. They have to search cars for drugs all the time. I don't know a police officer that's ever searched a car that found everything he was supposed to. And usually you figure it out later. But there's been times where I have been involved in a search, and we knew, you know, the snitch had told us that there's 6 grams of coke in that car, and we couldn't find it. And then the snitch calls us back and says, oh, you idiots, it was underneath the headrest. Nobody ever lifted up the headrest, and right underneath there is where they put it. And you're going, yep, you're right, I didn't do that.
Nobody's going to know if they find your outside door key. They're not going to know to look or where in the car.
Exactly.
Inside.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. You're exactly right.
Second matter that I'd like you to address sometime is... I come from Colorado, but I'm amazed at how few people there understand how ABS brakes stop, and they start feeling them chatter, and they let off, and they say pump the brakes, and you know, you might want to address that for people just staying on them.
Okay, and I'm the metaphor king on this, buddy. I'm the metaphor king. Somebody used that thing last week, and I said to my wife, what does metaphor mean? And she says, you're an idiot. So I looked it up, and I understand what he's talking about. All right, here's the metaphor. You're driving down the road, and there's 4 different brakes, left front, left rear, right rear. And as we go along, there's a little guy in the back seat, and he's monitoring the speed of all those tires, and he's going 50, you're going 55 miles an hour. So he's just watching his TV screen, and he has 4 55s on there. All of a sudden, a cow runs out in front of you. You slam on the brakes. Now, his job is to keep those tires rotating. So as he sees the 2 front tires come to a stop, and the back tires are still doing 40, he knows that you've locked up the front brakes. So he goes boop, boop, and he releases the pressure. So now the wheels begin to spin. He sees the 4 speedometers change. And then he locks up the brake again. And then he releases and locks it and releases and locks it and releases and locks it and releases. And back and forth. 300 times a second. So as you're driving your ABS car and the cow runs out in front of you, even with both feet on the brake, don't take your feet off. But now that cow's there, you can go left, go around the front of him, or you can go right and go around his tail end, either one, and come back into your lane. Perfect. It is a feeling of accomplishment you'll never feel in an older car with conventional brakes. The ABS system allows you to pull that off. You literally are going straight at a cow at 55 miles an hour, and you're going whoop, whoop, and you're back in. And that happens, again, 300 times a second. So the ABS system, what you're going to feel on your brake pedal is as he releases the fluid to get the tire to spin again, you'll feel the pedal shudder. But then as soon as he shuts it off, shuts the release off, then he has to build pressure back up in that wheel so the pump comes on. So you feel the pedal shudder once, and then you hear the pump come on. Shudder once, hear the pump come on, but it does it real rapidly. So with ABS brakes, and then we have stability control. Okay, here's my metaphor for stability control. You're driving your truck down the road, and say that I'm Superman. Say that I'm going to drive a big nail, a huge nail, 20 feet tall. I'm going to drive it straight down through the right rear corner of your car, and you're doing 50 miles an hour. I'm going to drive it straight through your car into the pavement at 50 miles an hour. Which way is the car going to rotate? Now the car's doing 50, and all of a sudden we have stopped the right rear. Picture that. Which way is the car going to rotate? The car's going to rotate to the right real hard. It's going to want to turn right real hard because we've nailed down the right rear. So what happens is stability control says, ooh, and the stability control applies only the left side brakes to keep you straight. Is that cool or not? And that happens on all cars with stability control. It is truly amazing. Because what we'll do is we'll fool the computer, and we'll be driving down the street, and if you want to bring your wife over, she drives, and I have a computer in my lap, I'm in the back seat, and all of a sudden, I just lock up the rear brake randomly, and she'll just panic, or you'll panic, whoever's driving. But really, the stability control will lock up the 2 left side brakes, which keeps the car straight, and you'll just bring you to a stop.
I didn't know how that worked. Thank you. That's exactly, a good explanation on that.
That's exactly. And it's so nifty to watch that happen and feel that happen when you blow a tire or when you get T-boned, but the car literally will straighten up for you. And when we come back next hour, I'm going to tell you about some new technology that's coming out that's going to even knock your socks off. But Uncle Sam is watching. And that black box that we started putting in 1996... Now most of you have a black box in your car. And when you get into a wreck, We can see what you were doing. So when you say that you were just driving down the road minding your own business, and we go in and we say, oh, here's airbag deployment. Oh, 5 seconds before, he's doing 100 miles an hour. His foot's on the floor. He doesn't ever touch the brake. You may remember about the deputy in Pinal County that was out on the 60 the other day. And he was going 100 miles an hour. 100 miles an hour. He is traveling a football field in 2 seconds.
On dirt road, I think he was.
60 on the highway. In a 45 zone. So he's coming, and he says he's chasing taillights. He doesn't have red lights, a siren on, or nothing. Now, we got a guy who has a stellar background, except he's been drinking. Okay, I'll grant you that. He turns left because the headlights are so far ahead of him. He says, I got plenty of time to turn left. He doesn't know that the headlights are attached to a rocket that's doing 100 miles an hour. He turns left. The cop hits him, kills him. There is no reason in the world for that policeman to be traveling 100 miles an hour. I think that it depends on who you talk to, 96 to 101. I've actually seen the black box data. And the fact of the matter is
2 minutes.
They didn't indict him. This is the political side of car repair, so I hope you don't mind. They didn't indict him, although Highway Patrol, the state police, investigated the accident, and they said he should have been indicted for manslaughter at the minimum. And for whatever reason, the county attorney in Pinal County decided not to. So the black box, and you know what else? He never hit the brakes. What was he doing at 100 miles an hour in a police car, which is nothing more than a bullet, at 100 miles an hour? He didn't see the guy turn left in front of him, and he never hit the brakes. So, you know, as a former police officer, I don't know a single policeman who says that's right. Not a single policeman that has, I've been involved in a conversation, and I don't initiate most of them. Everybody says he should have been gone. That's a mark on our record. He had no, and you know what he said? He said, I was doing traffic interdiction. I just chase taillights. I just drive along, and then all of a sudden I pull up behind him, and sometimes if they're hauling illegals or they're hauling drugs, they'll take off, and then I'll stop them and arrest them. I'm going to ask you a question. How much sense does it make to be doing 100 miles an hour with no lights and siren chasing taillights? What sense does that make? This is not even anything that we did in the 60s or the 70s when we were really wild dogs. The fact of the matter is, traffic interdiction is not that. That's using a 70 type word to explain a 2013 idiot behind the wheel. So, aside from all of that, thank you, Tom, very much for your conversation.
One more question, if you got time or not.
No, I don't, because I got 15 seconds before I got to close. But if you want to stay, I'm going to tell Gil, put him on a hold, and we'll be my first caller. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Give us a call. We'll talk cars, or we'll talk black boxes.
For informational purposes only.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed down up inside. Choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. 4 minutes after 11 o'clock at noontime, we'll be done with this show, but you're welcome to call us, 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, I have a toll-free number for you, 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. I'll get it right. This portion of others is brought to you by Quality Transmission. A friend of mine called me the other day, and he says, I don't think you told me the truth. And I says, well, if I didn't, it was probably on purpose. I said, what's the matter? He says, well, I took my car over to Quality Transmission. I said, okay. And he says, and they took me for a drive. And I said, okay. He says, and we drove and drove and drove. And then he drove and I drove and he drove and I drove. And we went slow and we went fast and we went left and we went right. I said, okay. He said, we were in the car for like 45 minutes. I said, okay. He says, when we got back, and he says, you know what? He says, it didn't happen, but I don't think it's that bad. And he said, if I were you, I'd just wait till it got worse and easier to find. I wouldn't really worry about it, because most hard part failures are going to have a symptom that's not going to come and go. And after all, this could be anything on the car, and maybe not the transmission. I said, so how did I lead you astray? And he goes, he didn't charge me anything. I said, well, that's what I told you. He drives them for free. He'll talk to you for free. He'll, you know, sit heck, if you want him to, he'll build a campfire in the parking lot. You can sit in lawn chairs and talk. He's a good guy. Bob at Quality Transmission and Steve, they're good guys. And they truly have your interest in front of any of their own. So if you're looking for a good shop in the East Valley, then Quality Transmission on McClintock between University and the 202. And he's a good guy, I promise you. All righty, Tom, you had a second question. I'm ready for it.
Yes, 02 Windstar, 80,000 miles on it. The code came on, and I'm told by the mechanic that the control for the ABS brakes, you know, the brake light control thing, comes on. And I'm told that all I don't have is the ABS function, but I do still have regular full brakes. And so then I'm missing all of the stuff you were talking about beforehand, stability control and ABS braking. Is it a real dangerous thing, or just a brisk one?
No, you sound old enough to have driven the cars before they even had ABS. And what you have right now is just that. You have what we call conventional brakes. Mm-hmm. And so if you slam on the brakes, you're going to lock up the tires, and you know, you'll lose steering for a little while. But no, the light is, and keep in mind, the light's yellow or orange, in which that coincides with the traffic lights. That doesn't mean stop. That means just, hey, I'm just letting you know that the light's on, and because of that, you have ABS. You have no ABS, and you have conventional brakes. So you are in no danger, and it's up to you to decide whether you want to spend that Windstar 02, 12 years old, I'm thinking
800 or so, I think.
I was going to say 800 to 1,000. That's what I was
going
to say.
And I'm going,
So if I were you, I'd probably just drive around for a while and just see how it feels without ABS. Do a couple panic stops.
Till I get in a crash and wished I had ABS. Huh?
Well, you know, that's true. That's true. And that could happen. But it's up to you. I can't make that decision for you. But have your wife up your life insurance just until you make the decision.
All right. Got it. Thanks so much.
Hey, you're welcome. All righty. We talk about black boxes on the cars. And I get to see those a lot. I'm certified in gathering that data. We have software that can handle a lot of cars. And what basically you get is, and this is just, it depends on year, make, and model and vehicle and all that other kind of stuff. But basically what we're going to get is 5 seconds before the airbags deploy. So once the airbags deploy, then they back up 5 seconds and they just log that. All right. We're going to
Bob
monitor.
Bob is next.
Say that again.
Bob.
Okay. And we're going to talk about black boxes right after we talk to Bob. Bob, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hello, Mark.
Hello.
I have a 1991 Nissan pickup, automatic transmission, four-cylinder, turbocharged.
Okay.
And when I shift from neutral to drive, now, frequently nothing happens. So I shift back to neutral, and then into drive, and then it engages.
Okay.
Is that linkage, or do I have to go to a transmission guy?
Well, I would think you'd be best served by a transmission guy, because it could be linkage. It could be. I want you to try this, Bob. When you put it in neutral, I want you to start in neutral, and when you put it into drive, I want you to firmly put it into drive. Okay?
Okay.
Firmly. So, is it a column shifter, or is it on the center console?
Column.
Okay, so you're going to put it neutral, you're going to put your hand on top of the shifter, and you're just going to push straight down. Boom!
Right.
Because if it's linkage, oftentimes you'll find that if you put it in gear firmly, because there's a rotating gear assembly, and in the valve body, it has to send fluid on 1st Street and 7th Avenue in order to get you into drive. And if the shaft doesn't move and open those two orifices, then I got 1st Street, but I don't have 7th Avenue. And so it's not going to go into drive. Now, another thing is does it do it both hot and cold?
Yes.
Okay, good. Then you've answered a great question, because if it only did it cold, that would be hard internal seals, and we'd use a conditioner. But if it does it hot, then we throw that idea out the window. Now, this really doesn't mean that you have to have a transmission overhauled. Here's why. Once we determine that there's a problem in the valve body is the device inside the transmission that picks park, reverse, neutral, drive, one, two. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to pull the pan off, and if the pan is full of metal and it has thrust washers in there and it has all kinds of metal that we recognize as being an uh-oh, then more than likely the valve body is sticking because this ground-up metal has been aspirated and inhaled by the transmission.
Yeah, well, it's also got 180,000 miles.
Well, you got your money out of it. What the
it's
heck?
A lovely all right, truck. Okay. I can't believe it.
All right. So you've been around the world. Let me see. Seven times you've been around the world, and you're complaining that this Nissan pickup truck is the transmission's letting you down. Can I talk to your wife for a minute? Doggone it, Bob. But anyway, let me tell you, the worst case scenario is you're going to need a transmission. But I want to promise you, if you take the cost of that transmission and you divide it over the next 12 months, it may be $200, $300 a month. That's it. So it's well worth it. If you love the truck, and besides that, if you go trade it in, I could do a lot of work on this old truck for the license plates and the sales tax on a new one. As a matter of fact, I'd have, depending on what you bought, I'd have between $6,000 and $8,000. I could put a new tranny, I could put a new engine, I could put tires and wheels, I could put dual exhaust, and I could replace the turbo. But I'm just telling you that let's have it checked first, because this also could be a $100 repair.
I go to Marshall's here on Indian School.
He's a no
can
good.
Can he son. Tell what I should do, or should I just go directly to transmission?
You know, I think you're best. First of all, I love Marshall's. You know that. Right. Marshall's is a great guy. I would go to a transmission shop, and you're going to be in Scottsdale or Tempe or where?
Well, I'm a friend of that young man that used to work for Tri-City.
Okay.
Are they still operating?
Well, Mike and Leon sold Tri-City to a young man who sold swamp coolers. And the turmoil that caused me necessitated me removing Tri-City Transmission from my list after 22 years of being on my list.
Oh, okay.
Because when management changed, clearly the thought process, in my opinion, thought process changed. I'm going to tell you that Quality Transmission in Tempe is a good place, and there's another place in East Phoenix called the Automatic Transmission Exchange.
Uh-huh.
Either one of those two would be in your general area. So Quality in Tempe,
uh-huh,
or 40th Street in Washington, which is Automatic Transmission Exchange, and that's owned by Phil. And Phil's been around since Jesus was on a tricycle. Either one of those guys can help you, and they would help you.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, thank you.
Frank is next.
One of the things I want to tell you too is that you don't get to pay to be on my list. And I turn down 99 out of 100 that apply. And I'm the only list in the entire world that's ever kicked people off for misbehaving. And I feel strongly about my what I owe you with respect to playing games and stuff. I owe you the truth, and I'm not going to send you to anybody I wouldn't send my mom to. And so over the last couple of years, I've removed two shops. You can read about it at marksalem.com. Because they're not doing what they ought to be doing, and I don't have any problem with that at all, because I practiced what I preach. Okay, who's next for us? Frank? Frank, good morning to you, buddy. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I got two quick questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is, a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned that you use only Top Cog serpentine belts made by Goodyear. Is that it?
It is. The premium belt, as far as I'm concerned, is that premium Goodyear, and I don't think it's a Top Cog, but basically, yes, it has a cog on the top.
Okay, and that's Goodyear.
Yes.
Okay, second question is, I own a 2008 Impala with higher mileage on it, 85,000, and I have a chance to buy we had a death in the family, my mom has a 2000 Impala with 37,000 miles with the 3.4 in it, and been excellently maintained and everything like that. What's your thoughts on that?
If you're only going to change because of the mileage, I probably wouldn't do that. I think that it's more important to have all the safety devices of 08 than it is to have the list is going to be smaller of safety devices in the early 2000-2001 Impala.
Yeah.
And there's only 50,000 miles between the two of them. And yours is an 08. I'm thinking out loud here. Yours is an 08.
07.
One
yeah,
minute.
The same thing, yeah.
Okay, so let's call it 07, and it's 13 now. So you're 6 years old, and you're 85,000 miles. So you're hardly at 10,000 miles a year. And so if we look at the two cars in the next 5 years, you're going to be in the same boat with that one that you are right now. So I would vote that perhaps you sell mom's car to one of the grandkids or to somebody else and share the proceeds amongst whoever is in the you know, whatever, but trading in your 85 for a 35, I think I would suggest you not.
Yeah, and as far as that, you know, it has that normal piston slap on that 3.4,
right?
Yeah, right. I've had another car that went 118,000 miles that I never had a problem with it.
Okay, and I'm going to talk about piston slap when we come back. That's nothing I'm afraid of, by the way.
No,
okay.
Me neither. No.
Yeah, it's not anything to get worked up about. It's just as long as you know it's there and as long as you know it sounds like it's there. We'll be back right after this.
Pat is next. Pat. Okay.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're going to take your calls right after I get done with some business here. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my buddy Kurt at Kurt's Auto Repair. You'd be hard-pressed to find the level of expertise that their auto repair technicians actually have and can provide. Kurt has years of experience working on all kinds of cars and trucks, gas and diesels. Their goal is to offer the best services at affordable prices and to get you back on the road as quickly as possible. Kurtz is located at I-17 and Bell, just east on the north side of the road. I-17, Bell, east of I-17, north side of the road. Give Kurtz Auto Repair a try, and you'll understand why I recommend them. Real quick, before we take Pat, we were talking about black boxes. The black box data, and this is just kind of a big picture thing, we have your throttle, we have your RPM, your speed, and your brakes, and we also know if your seat belt's buckled or not, and the passenger, whether it's seat belt or buckle, and we also know what the delta V is. Otherwise, you hit something doing 40, and instantly your speed drops to 20. That means you lost 20 miles an hour, and of course, that's well within the parameters of having the airbag deploy. If you hit a curb and you only have a delta V or a loss of mile per hour of 3 miles an hour, you're going to complain because the airbag didn't go off, and we're going to tell you that that was not a severe enough crash to ask the airbag to deploy or have the black box ask the airbag to deploy. Your throttle, the RPM, and the speed, you've got to know that they coincide with one another. So when you throttle up to the floor, we should see RPM rise and speed rise. So you can't possibly tell us that the throttle pedal sensor is bad when we see the throttle position sensor go to 100% and then we see the RPM and the speed rocket up. So it's not going to fly. And frankly, there's not a lot anybody can do today in order to get rid of the black box data. People are trying, but frankly, they've done a doggone good job of providing us with data that we can hang our hat on, with few exceptions, and I'm not going to share those with you. Pat, good morning to you, buddy. How can I help you?
Okay, you know, I have an 88 Nissan Maxima. It's garaged over in San Diego.
Okay.
And the AC has not been touched for 4 or 5 years because the weather over there doesn't call for it. But this year, someone's going to be driving the car and they want air conditioning on it. So I found out that it takes the R12.
Okay.
And altogether, there's 38 ounces is what's needed, or 3 cans.
Okay.
Someone told me, and they sold me some O-rings, which okay. may be needed, Mark. So let me ask you, the other route is to go to, I think it's R134, and you have to change the Schrader valves, and, you know, it's a bunch of different things, and I understand it may not do the job as well as just putting back the R12. So yeah. what's your idea about it?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't change from 12 to 134 because 12 excels around town and 134, you really see a difference on the highway. So they each have their own good and bad. I don't think you should try to change your Maxima over to 134 because I think you're going to have a whole lot of components and that's going to turn into a $2,000 or $3,000 bill.
Yeah.
So I don't like that. I'll tell you what I like. First of all, a can be 10 ounces, 12 ounces, 14 ounces, and 16 ounces. So you have to be careful about which can you're talking about.
Right.
But the 34, 38 that you said tells me all I need to know. If I were you, I'd call around at garages and I would say to them, do you have the ability to take my refrigerant out, clean it, measure it, put it right back in, and then make up the deficit? And if, say, for instance, that I have 10 ounces in the car and I need 34, then my deficit is 24, do you give me credit for the 10 you took out? Because we have equipment today that can do that, but not everybody has it.
Yeah.
So, you know, at most shops, that's $89 to $95 plus the deficit.
Yeah.
And so if you're down, you know, 30 ounces and it happens to be $3 an ounce, you're going to be down 30 ounces times $3 an ounce.
Yeah.
$90. But on the other hand, if you're down 5 ounces and the low pressure switch has turned the system off, then you're down $15.
You know, Mark, let me ask you, let's assume that someone said, well, more than likely that there's not much left in with the Freon, but shouldn't the system be evacuated anyway and then just go ahead and put whatever it is, the 38, three cans, if they're just 10 ounces a can, just put them back in and then just go from there?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yes, that's the Fred Flintstone way. That's the way we've always done it. But with new equipment, we hook it up, we program the computer, and we tell the computer, suck everything that Pat has out of this Maxima, and then I want you to hold a vacuum for 30 minutes so I can make sure that there's not a big leak in the system.
Right.
And then I want you to tell me how much you pulled out, 10 ounces, and how much oil you pulled out, tell me 1 ounce, and I'm going to say, okay, I want you to now fill this up, and the computer's going to say, how many ounces does it hold? And you say, 3, 8, enter.
Right.
And boom, it does it.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing, except before we'd suck out all the refrigerant and we wouldn't give you credit for it.
Yeah, I see. But Mark, you know, the thing is, it did have a leak, and that's the reason why it hadn't been used for a couple of years over there. So obviously, you know, it did have a leak, and who knows what's left in there. So going on that premise, once again, should we, you know, just ask to have the system evacuated and just put in the new Freon? I know there's a fella over here who happens to sell it, but it's $50 a can, $50.
Yeah.
But
right.
I also know that if you go down south, you know where, you can get it for like $9 a can.
You can, but still $9 a can is pretty expensive. Let me
2 minutes.
Doing this yourself is a recipe for disaster.
I wouldn't do it myself.
Okay. Let's look at two possibilities here. Number one, who's going to borrow the car for the next, for how many days are they going to use the car?
Oh, they'll use it every day over there for about 3 months, and then we come back over here, back
okay.
to Phoenix.
All right. You can here's your two options. Either they rent a car and leave your Maxima alone, or you just go ahead and fill it up and see how long it takes. Now, how about if it took $150 to bring it alive and it lasts a month, then you're going to go $150, $150, $150, okay?
Yeah, right.
That's $450. I'm pretty sure you could do a good dent on a leak, but you couldn't do a compressor for $450. So the difference is they can probably rent a car for $400 a month. So, you got two ways to go here, but economics needs to drive it. Let's just have it topped off the day before they pick it up, and then they drive it, and let's just see how long it goes. If it goes 3 days and it gets warm, then put them in a rental car. Tell them to get their own rental car. If it takes a month or 4 or 5 weeks to go dry, just fill it up again and again, and we'll be done with it.
Yeah.
And then get it back over here to Phoenix where we can fix it right.
Well, that's
the California
what I'm,
guys
yeah,
can't do enough,
that's
right?
what I'm going to do. I'm yeah. going to bring it back next year, though. But in the meantime, my wife wants to have the AC working over there.
Oh, it's your wife.
Yeah.
You can hire someone to fan her from the passenger seat cheaper than you. Oh, my goodness. And I suppose she wants your credit cards, too, doesn't she?
You know, Mark, after 60 years, you know, of marriage.
That's what I have to look forward to.
You live and learn, buddy.
Yeah. Hey, don't tell her I was teasing her, okay?
Yeah, okay.
All right, thank you
very
much,
Mark. Thanks a lot.
All right. Yep. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Bob and Ellen, who own Larry Harker's Auto Repair at 38th Avenue in Indian School. Larry Harker's can do anything. And what's really good about Larry Harker's is if they're not the best shop to perform the work or the diagnosis, they'll tell you. That's kind of nifty. They're looking out what's best for you. Bob and Ellen are a great team, and Bob knows cars, so his technicians aren't likely to be able to pull the proverbial wool over his eyes, not to mention the fact that most of their technicians have been with him for years and years and years. So Harker's, Larry Harker's Auto Repair, is a trusted source. Quality repairs, affordable prices. So 38th Avenue and Indian School, if you live in that area, Harker's Auto Repair, Larry Harker's Auto Repair is the place I think you should go. Real quick, talking about, and hang on just a minute, Jerry, anybody else, 602-508-0960. We have 40-mile-an-hour cars today, but there's a big but here. Most of them are not normally aspirated. Otherwise, they have a turbocharger on them. You can take a little four-cylinder engine that's a dog, and you can put a turbocharger on it and bring that motor alive. So you can get better fuel economy because you don't have to go so deep into the throttle to get that thing to do 60 miles an hour. We have crash avoidance systems, rear and front. We got radar out the front and radar out the back. If you're not paying attention and you're coming up on the car in front of you, the radar of crash avoidance system will give you an audible alarm to tell you to wake your butt up, and it'll take control of the steering and take control of the brakes if you don't, and they will keep you from hitting the car in front of you. That's pretty cool. On the rear end side, your car senses in a car coming up on fast on you, and it warns you with an audible and with an illuminated icon in the side rear view mirror saying, this guy's probably going to hit you. So from there we go into, this is kind of nifty, and I think this is probably one of the nicest things. There is a car out there, it's a Nissan, that when you start filling your tires with air, you don't need a gauge because the horn will honk three times when you get to where you need to be. Is that cool? So you pull up to a gas station, and you simply hook the hose up to your car, and if immediately it honks three times, it has enough air. And if it doesn't, you just hang on to it till it honks three times. We also have hands-free liftgate. You've seen it on the commercial where you wave your foot underneath the bumper and the tailgate opens up for you. That's pretty cool. And then we've got touch-sensitive buttons, so all the computers and all of the stuff you're going to do is going to be touchscreen from this point forward. And so when you look at all of this stuff, and then you've got unique surfaces. Listen to this. Ford. They say Ford, an industry leader. I want to take issue with that. But they use soybean-based foam in the seats of your cars, as well as denim and recycled plastic bottles in your carpets. Chrysler uses recycled polyurethane foam destined for landfills in your seats, and they used recycled tire rubber for your dashboard seals. So if your Chrysler smells a little bit bad, it's either going to smell like a landfill or it's going to smell like a recycled tire. The Honda Fit is equipped with soft, durable, and environmentally friendly biofabric made from a sugarcane byproduct. And folks, I want to tell you something. I'm old enough to know that when they say sugarcane byproduct, they don't want to tell you what it is. All righty. Jerry, you're up first, buddy. What can I do for you?
Mark, I called you about 3 weeks ago. And what I told you was like a universal joint noise, but was intermittent.
Okay.
And you thought something was loose. And you told me to go to my favorite shop, Kurtz, and tell Jeff to lay down and drive over him.
Right.
Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Well, Jeff said if somebody's going to get driven over, it's going to be you. But he did look at it. There was nothing loose. He found a service bullet, and I've got a split drive shaft on the F-150.
Uh-huh.
And the where it comes together in the splines has to be repacked with Teflon grease.
1 minute.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what, he did that and walked out of there for $85, and I got a new truck.
And all you have to do is every once in a while, get underneath there, you know where the spline's at, put a bunch of, have a rubber glove, or if you don't, you're a tough guy, you don't need a rubber, and just grab a hold of that spline and just smear some grease all over it. Because it gets so sticky and the grease is gone that it causes a clunk clunk on go and on stop. So as the drive shaft collapses and comes apart, so he takes it apart, he cleans both ends, the female and the male side, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, then go back to science class, and he takes he takes those apart, he cleans them all up, he packs it, and then every time it collapses, it pushes a little grease out onto the splines. You're home free. And he charged you $85?
Yep.
Oh, tell him I think that was a little high, okay? When you go back to him, you just tell him, I think that's a little high.
$85 and a dozen donuts.
Oh, and a dozen donuts. Well, see, that's the difference. That's the difference.
They're great people, Mark. Don't knock them.
No, I know. You know that. I know that,
I'll
too.
I'll be back there many, many times.
All righty. Well, thank you very much, Jerry. I really appreciate you calling and saying something nice about Kurtz. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars. We're going to take Charlie's call first. Charlie, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, thank you, sir. I got a 95 Ford F-250 with a 7.3 turbo diesel. I'm getting smoke probably out of the crankcase back up through the dipstick tube. How much trouble am I in?
It depends. It depends on where that combustion's coming from. Is it coming from a head gasket, and we're shoving, as the piston comes up into the compression stroke, are we shoving that compressed air into the engine block itself, which is shoving the dipstick tube out? Or is it piston rings? As the piston goes up, that pressure is getting past the rings into the crankshaft. There's a lot of things that can be. How many miles are on it?
262,000.
Okay. You really like that truck?
I love it to pieces.
I'd put a motor in it. I mean, I would have it diagnosed appropriately, but I wouldn't be shy about putting a motor. First, let me tell you, the 7.3 was a great motor, and people like that motor, and there's lots of guys like you and me that still think that that's the best Ford motor out there. The newer model one, the last 2 or 3 years, the 10, the 11, the 12, the 13, it's come up, but everything made in the middle in the 2000 year is ugly. But you've got a good truck there, and I'm guessing, I'm going to shoot off the top of my head, that you're going to probably spend between $10,000 and $12,000 for an engine, and here's how I'm figuring it. I'm figuring you got at least $3,000 in and out for a long block for labor. So you got $3,000, then you're going to have another $1,000 worth of miscellaneous motor mounts and hoses and fan belts and blah, 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 steam clean the engine compartment, all that kind of stuff. And you're probably going to want to put a turbo on it, and then you're going to have a motor. So, and then you're going to have $400 worth of tax. So if you go engine, labor, miscellaneous, and tax, I'm betting you're in the $10,000 to $12,000 range. Now, that divided over the next 2 or 3 years is really nothing. But
no, I agree.
Is it consuming any oil?
Not at all. It doesn't smoke. It doesn't burn any oil. I'm just wondering. I put 14 quarts in it at each change, and because that's what the dipstick says. But the owner's manual, I think, says 12 quarts. Could it be too much oil in the pan?
Absolutely, it could be. Absolutely. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to put the next time you do oil change, do your 12. And then start it up and let it run, shut it off, walk away for a few minutes, and come back and look at the dipstick. Under the best of conditions, 12 would be at the full mark. As a matter of fact, I'm going to back up. Forget everything I said. I want you to put 10 in it. Start it, shut it off, and see where 10 is. If 12 is the right amount, 10 is going to be below the ad mark. 11 will bring it up closer to the ad mark and should be right at the ad mark, and a 12 is going to be on the full. If everything works fine,
you should be able to tell that. But if you overfill it with oil, yes, it will pressurize the engine block and blow it out of the dipstick tube. Another thing you want to do is make sure your oil's not growing. Otherwise, you put 12 in it, it's at the full mark. The next time you check it 1,000, 2,000 miles later, you've got it half a quart over the full. That tells us that you've got either coolant or fuel in the oil. It's causing the oil to thin. Now we've got a mixture of oil and diesel fuel, which then causes the combustion problem you have. So in that case, it would be, there's a variety of things that could be on the 7.3, but most commonly is an injector that's stuck open.
Okay, thank you, Mark. I do appreciate it.
All right, good luck to you. And if you want, let me ask you a question. Who would you use to do your work? Anybody particular, or you don't have anybody?
You guys replaced the clutch for me back 3 or 4 years ago, and I like your people. I'd probably come into you.
All right. And other diesel guys, anytime, for the rest of you, anywhere in town, northeast, northwest, central, southeast, southwest, east valley, whatever, we have a shop that we can refer you to. And I promise you, I don't make a dime. I promise you. You can go in and spend $10 or you can spend $10,000. And if they try to give me any money, I refuse it. I do it because I've been blessed myself. Thank you, Vance, Charlie. Thank you very much. Now, we're right around the corner from graduations. We got kids graduating high school. We got kids graduating college. We got master's degrees. We've got all kinds of this. All my life, and there's a method to this story. All my life, I've been a Levi's guy. And my wife dresses quite different than I do. So when we go out together, they think I'm her dad. And she dresses very classy, very nice. She dresses as if she's going to a funeral every day, or at least that's the way it looks to me. So not too long ago, she says, your shirts look bad on you because your neck is 20 inches. And she says, and then you buy these shirts where the seam on your shoulders down to your elbows. She says, I found a guy that I'm going to have come to our office, and he's going to measure you for your new shirts. Folks, I was about excited about that as you can imagine, okay? I think the first three appointments, I ended up being in a different state. But she finally collared me. Matthew came in, took the measurements, and she had five of the most wonderful shirts made for me. They literally, like, you'll have a yellow and blue shirt, and the cuffs on the inside are blue, and on the inside of where it buttons up, it's blue. And on the inside of the collar, it's blue, so it has contrasting colors. I got to tell you, everywhere I go, somebody says, Mark, you look kind of nice. My wife says, they're telling you, honey, that you looked like hell before because you always wore golf shirts or cowboy shirts and Levi's and boots. It's true. I feel a whole lot better in my shirts. If you have someone, a man, an old cowboy who's never had a shirt that really fit him, or maybe your son who's in football that has never had a shirt, it's the nicest thing you could do. I'm telling you from the bottom of my heart, that is one of the nicest things that my wife Renee has done for me, is she's insisted that I go through the process to have Matthew measure me and get five new shirts. I have five of the nicest long sleeve cowboy shirts, and they fit me so well, it's unbelievable. So he's from Richard K. Clothiers. His name is Matthew Zicardi. But you just email me your name, mark@marksalem.com, and I'll send you the information you need. He's a great guy. He's gonna go out of his way to make it right, and he knows that if you're going to wear this tie, you need another half an inch here, and we're going to do these stays here, and do you want your... I even have my initials on my cuffs. I've never had that in my life. And the only reason I can think that she put it there is because maybe I have Alzheimer's and she thinks I'm going to get lost. And so at least with my initials, they'll have a head start on where I am. At least that's what she said, and I don't believe a word she said. But anyway, I do this because he did a good job for me. He didn't give me a discount. I'm not selling you out for my discount. I paid what you're going to pay. But it's something special, and it's one of those gifts that a guy wouldn't normally get. Have custom-made shirts. So if your husband's kind of hard to fit, or if he has problems with shirts, then give me a call, or just email me, mark@marksalem.com. Car repair isn't easy, and the hard part is the communication between you and us. The responsibility for that communication is us. We are responsible to make sure that communication fits our needs. We are responsible to get the right information from you. We are responsible for proper diagnosis and proper repair. That's the reason why I tell you time and time again, there's five things I want you to remember. When you take your car in, you tell them the symptoms, just the symptoms. That's all I want you to tell them, is the symptoms. Now, you may go in for maintenance, and you can go ahead and tell them, I need this done, or I'm due for my cooling system. Or you say, hey, what am I due for? Call me with an estimate. But if you have a particular problem that needs to be solved, give them the symptoms. When they call you, they're going to say, we've identified the problem, and it's going to cost you $400. And it's at this point you say, now, I'm assuming this is really a fix and not a guess, right? Otherwise, you're absolutely sure this is going to fix the fact that my car does da-da-da-da-da, and they should say yes. And then you can say, and if it doesn't fix the problem, then what do we do next? And I hope they say, then we're going to take those parts back out and give you a credit for them. I hope they say that we're going to unwind that whole deal. That's what I hope they say. Because if they're really good, then they're going to look you in the eye and say, I'll give you all your money back if this doesn't fix it. But you and I are going to take a ride when you pick it up. And we're going to show you your vibration's gone, or this is gone, or that is gone. That's the way it works. Then you say to them, what's my final cost? I don't care about what this part costs and this part costs. I want to know how much do I have to write my check for. Because sales tax, shop supplies, and environmental charges could add 15% to your bill. 15% of a $500 bill is $75. That's a lot of money that all of a sudden you're sitting there trying to write a check for and hadn't planned for it. You also ask for your old parts back. Why? Say I put that $400 mass airflow sensor on your car, and in 2 days you know I didn't fix your car. You bring it back, but where's the mass airflow sensor I took off your car? It's in the trash. It's gone. So now we're going to fight about that $400 part, aren't we? But if you say, put the parts in the boxes and put them back in my car, put them in the trunk, I don't care, put them on the passenger side floorboard, please wrap them up with some plastic so I don't have, and I don't want anything that smells like gas in my car, okay? We should be smart enough to know that. So when you come back in, you have your old mass airflow sensor in your hand, and you can say, I hope you say, it didn't work. I still have exactly the same symptoms, and I can demonstrate them to you if you'd like to take a ride, but here's my old mass airflow sensor. You can put this back in, or let's talk about how we're going to unwind this deal. That's what it's all about. Last and not least, pay with a credit card. You see, a credit card gives you really an awesome amount of power over the vendor, over the shop, over the businessman, because here's what you need to have that wiped off. You take your car into my shop, and I tell you it's a mass airflow sensor, and I charge you $400, and it doesn't fix the problem. On my work order, it says that you have symptom A, B, and C. After you fight with me, I decide I'm not going to give you your mass airflow sensor money back. I'm using me just as an example. Then you go to shop B, and you give him exactly the same symptoms, A, B, and C. He fixes it for $900. And after 2 weeks, you know it's fixed. This is what the letter sounds like. Dear MasterCharge, dear Visa, dear American Express, dear Discover, on this date, at this time, I took my car in, and I said it does this, this, and this. And they said $400 would fix it, and here's a copy of the receipt. On this day, 2 days later, I went back and said it's not fixed. And they wouldn't do anything about it. So then I took it to shop B 2 days later, and here's a copy of their repair order, and now it's fixed. And as you can see, they replaced the ignition control module, and these people replace the mass airflow sensor. So I want to dispute the mass airflow sensor. I don't want to pay for it because they told
me
that would fix my car, and it didn't. Here's repair order number one. Here's repair order number two. Here's my phone number. Call me if you need me. I can't promise you in any way, shape, or form that you're going to win every time. But that's the best guarantee I can give you to make sure. The other guarantee is use one of my shops. Because I promise, they'll take good care of you, at least to the Better Business Bureau satisfaction. So, and I want you to write a nice complaint. I don't want you to call anybody names. That is counterproductive. Don't breathe fire out of your nose, and I'm I shouldn't even be saying that because I do that a lot myself, but forget it. I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. The idea is write a nice complaint, get to the facts, and if it's more than a page and a half long, you're going to lose anybody's attention. If you start writing a complaint that ends up to be 9 pages, 7 pages, 14 pages, you're never going to get anywhere. And if you tell us verbatim on this date at this time, this is what happened, this is what I was thinking, this is what they said, this, that's not going to fly. That's a bad deal. Be concise, to the point. Write a nice complaint, and don't call anybody names, and tell them what you want. Here's my complaint. Here's what happened. Here's the copy of the repair order. I would very much like you to make the appropriate refund, and I think it's what's fair is $111.12, something like that. That's what car repair is all about. But the communication problems are ours and ours alone. Unless, of course, you tell us that it's hiccuping and it's not really hiccuping. So those are the things that we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be smart enough to get the right information out of you, and if necessary, to go take a ride with you. And don't be afraid to ask for that. I want someone to take a ride with me. I want to show someone how to make this happen. Until next week, please wear your seatbelt. Please don't drink and drive. Please don't speed. And if somebody does something nice for you, could you just stick your arm out the window and wave thank you? That's a good feeling to have, both waver and the person that's getting the wave. I'll see you next week.